at the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it in. No timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the world's greatest podcast. And on today's podcast, Eric Musselman, head coach of Nevada, a Final Four contender, will join us. As well as Dan and I, we will discuss Villanova. What is going on? Syracuse. How much will they get better with Frank Howard? We're going to look at Feast Week. Dan's going to be in Atlantis. We're going to talk about Atlantis. We're going to talk about the NIT. And we're going to talk about Maui. D squared, it is the season. It's not the season for giving. It's the season for college basketball, eating turkey, sitting on the beach in the Bahamas while I freeze my rear end off. But last week was an interesting week for college basketball because we have the defending national champion. Now, Furman is also a team that now has beaten two Final Four teams. They beat Loyola Chicago, and they've beaten Villanova. But when you look at this Villanova team right now in this moment in time, let's be honest about ourselves here now. 60 points a game, almost 350 threes, 20 rebounds, and four NBA players. They're not going to be the same team. And let's face it, Eric Pascal, Phil Booth, they were their fifth and sixth leading scorer last year. They have a new role. What's your take on Villanova? How good can they be? Or do you think this is one of those years where they take two steps back to go maybe two steps forward?
I think this, man. I don't think they thought Amari Spellman and Dante DiVincenzo were gone. They don't have guys. And they would have. We were going to talk about this year's team. We'd have been talking about, hey, Dante DiVincenzo could be the player of the year in the league. But your coach can get some wins.
The other guys try to win, too.
The other guys are busting it, and that coach getting paid a lot of money. I just think that, you know, they got depleted. You know, Colin Gillespie needs to start being a star. I don't know. Maybe he needs to be the next Dante DiVincenzo. But right now, he's not. They're not. And it's no fluke, but Michigan's no joke. Let's be honest. Michigan is no joke. Michigan is damn good. And you know what? They'll be fine eventually, but maybe not this year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's face it. Kyle Gillespie, to me, he's a nice player, but when he gets in the lane, it's not like people are really worrying about him. So, like, even in the Michigan game, he drove it. And you know what Michigan did? They stayed home on all those guys relocating and said, all right, Kyle Gillespie, score over us. You're not scoring against Xavier Simpson. And we're also taking away all those step-in threes, and boom, that was over. I mean, they're shooting 320 from the three. You know, obviously, they lost NBA players. They're turning it over and not doing anything defensively. So, you know, Jay Wright, he'll stay positive. He'll get as much as he can out of this team. But, you know, this is going to be an interesting year. Now, how about another Northeastern-type team? UConn, the Fighting Danny Hurleys, roll into Madison Square Garden and get a little piece of Syracuse, who – in my opinion, look, I like what Danny's doing in terms of he's getting these guys to compete and play harder. He's got very good guard play. They made some incredible shots down the stretch of that Syracuse game. And he's got those kids buying into him. And he's investing in them, and they're playing for him. You can see that. I mean, I thought that they dictated the tempo of the game with their defense. I thought they really pushed Syracuse out. Syracuse's lack of a point guard obviously was exposed. But I also think there was something else that was exposed. Am I way off on this? And I know he played without a point guard, but as Shaper said, he's a good player. He can rebound, he can attack, he can run. All of a sudden, he's getting a little static because he's shooting too many threes. He's not attacking the basket. He's not flying around. UConn is who they are. They've got good guard play, not much up front. They're going to play hard for Danny Hurley. I got a concern whether Frank Howard's back or not, how Syracuse is playing, because they don't assist, they don't share the ball, and no one makes a play for anyone else. And it seems like Brissett right now, like to me, it seems like he's trying to show people what he can't do rather than what makes him different.
In fact, Seth, it's interesting you say that, because last year I didn't even know who he was. I did a game. Whoa, this kid can get to the rim. Whoa, this kid's talented. And then, how many times, well, you can't shoot if you don't make any money. So now you try to do that instead of, I don't know, help your team win.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference Frank Harris is going to make, he's going to make shots. But I'll tell you the other thing he's going to do that I think is important. I think you get a bigger guy at the top of that zone. So now maybe you're getting some deflections. You're getting out in transition. I mean, he's 6'5". He's long.
I didn't play zone much as a head coach. Didn't play it really at all as an assistant. There are some guys that know how to play zone. People think a zone is just easy. No, there are guys that understand how to rotate, where to go, how to push people down. But having a guy that knows how to play, right? No, experience in the top of a zone is a big deal that is often never discussed.
Yeah, I mean, Jalen Carey is going to be a good player. There's no doubt about it. But he's not ready to distort, to get over the top of screens, to communicate and take the next pass. Either is Harris, the transfer from ECU. When you sit out that year, it's not the same. Look, when guys sit out, they make every shot. The coach is really not even coaching him much. He's kind of freeing him up. I mean, life is good. Then all of a sudden, when you're eligible, life changes. I'll tell you two teams that don't take plays off, and you mentioned it earlier. Michigan defensively, when you have a guy like Charles Matthews, and when you have a guy like Xavier Simpson, and you have a guy like Teske, you got three guys that can flat out defend. Teske, terrific ball screen defender, physical around the basket. Xavier Simpson defends and disrupts. Charles Matthews, even when he's not making shots, he impacts the game on the defensive end. I am blown away by, look, we think of John Beilein as a, offensive guru. We think of them as an offensive savant. I don't think they have an offensive identity just yet. I think they will. They surely have a defensive identity. And they're hard to score against. They got enough size. They're physical. My guy, Iggy Brazakis. I mean, that dude is really good and tough. What's that? Chase Winovich, the football player for Michigan?
Yeah.
He hurt? He's the Chase Winovich of Michigan basketball, because he's just kind of flying around, knocking people, not backing down to anyone. I am really impressed with Michigan, and I think that they're just scratching the surface offensively.
Luke Yelich. They've never seen Coach Beilein more in his element talking to Yelich, because both are former high school teachers. They say he's got a great mind for defense, explains it, but let's be honest. There are those in Big Ten world that feel as if Xavier Simpson is the best point guard in the Big Ten right now. Now, there's been some good ones. C.J. Jackson's been really whatever, but he's been that good. And we all think of Beilein certainly as an offensive guy. But when he puts a game plan in, like being disciplined enough, they stick with it for 40 minutes, Seth. You don't see mistakes. You see them sticking with what they drew up to go into the game. And it's pretty damn impressive to me. And beating Providence by 20 the other night.
That's a home game for Providence.
Providence
is a hard-playing, well-coached team. The Fighting Ed Cooleys, I mean, those dudes are good. I mean, they're young, but they're tough. They're physical. They're athletic. Now, am I making a mistake? I watched, and you know what I'm about to say, are you? This past week, and I watched the Hawkeyes. And I saw the Hawkeyes be physical. I saw the Hawkeyes defend. I saw the Hawkeyes have versatility offensively. I saw really good physical backup point guard play by Connor McCaffrey. I thought was really, really good. I saw a team that's a year older, a year tougher, a little more mature. I saw a good basketball team on both sides. Last year, I was my sleeper Final Four team. They turned into Rip Van Winkle. Do they have a chance? And do you see a difference in this Iowa team?
I do. McCaffrey was great. This kid, Luka Garza, plays with a toughness that is so contagious, it's incredible. I get energized doing Iowa games. I think Fran, they mentioned on the broadcast, really is committed to having this team defend. Tyler Cook's a man. Tyler Cook is a man. Bad, bad man. I love him.
To me, it seemed like they had a commitment. And I'll tell you what, Garza does have. That dude's got great hands. I mean, like, if it's near him, he's going to get – well, like, to me, the Big Ten just in general. I mean, you look at Nebraska, but Nebraska is playing. I'll tell you, the guy that doesn't even do a lot in terms of scoring, Isaiah Roby is a stud. I mean, that guy can do a lot of different things, and they're a veteran team. I mean, Palmer's a fifth-year guy. Copeland's a fifth-year guy. Roby's, you know, an athletic junior, Glenn Watson. I mean, Nebraska to me, like the Big Ten to me, we talk about down year in the Big Ten. No, that it's not even close. It's, I mean, like Nebraska is good. Wisconsin to me, I'll tell you one thing. If Wisconsin to me, either I'm way off or Ethan Happ might be the trickiest man in college basketball, because that dude in the high post on the baseline, he's got all kinds of, he's averaging like 7 assists a game. The guy, you know, and that is a good team. You got Davidson and you got Demetri Trice making every shot. I mean, the Big Ten is ridiculous in my opinion. Maybe not the number of national champion teams, but like they don't, there's no rocking chair games in that league.
Seth, I think you're absolutely right. Big Ten's as deep as I've seen it, and the reason it's as deep as I've seen it is because I do think Iowa and I do think Nebraska are legitimate teams.
There's no easy outs. Now, like, there are some leagues that, you know, like Pac-12 had a bad year last year. I'm not sure it's getting that much better. Now, I do think Washington has a chance to be good. I think Oregon has a chance to be good. I think UCLA has a chance to be pretty good because they're talented and athletic. I think USC has some dudes, you know, and they have a chance to be good, you know, Porter and Boatwright, but they just haven't distinguished themselves. Now, it's early in the season, but eventually a league that with the schools and the location and the notoriety and the brands of those leagues, you would think those leagues, that, you know, the Pac-12 would year in and year out, be just a little bit better, wouldn't you?
A lot of good coaches on the West Coast in high school, a lot of great AAU programs. I do think, obviously, Arizona has a chance to make a great statement in Maui.
Arizona's going to be like one of Sean Miller's Xavier teams.
Right.
Pretty defensively, play a little bigger, you know, a little tougher. I mean, you know, and you know what? I actually think that two Brandons, you know, have a chance to do something. Brandon Randolph, he might be one of the most improved players in the country, averaging 18 points a game, and Brandon Williams, the freshman who decommitted and recommitted, you know, they give him a little bit of scoring and a little athleticism in the backcourt. But, you know, I still think they're like a big question mark right now. But, they, you know, I think they are going to have a grittiness to them.
Seth, at the end of the day, they got guys, they got players, they got coaches that have paid a lot of money. They just need to be better. I mean, and they haven't been better, and we'll see what happens with Arizona and Maui. They got a real, real shot. So we'll see.
Well, when we come back, I'm going to have Coach Eric Musselman, the Mus Bus, on his birthday, by the way. Well, to me, one of the really good feel-good stories of college basketball, team that could be in the Final Four, Eric Musselman, when we come back on the other side. I'd like to welcome in the Nevada head coach, my man Eric Musselman. I am all in on the Mus Bus. I just want to let you know that. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I got both feet in. I'm riding it right through the whole season. But this is a special Mus Bus presentation because today is like, Mus, your birthday, and you're kind of hanging out with us, and you have a game today. How's all that work?
What? You know what, Seth? What better person to hang out with than come on your podcast on my birthday and game day?
Yeah, it doesn't get much better than that. I know of all the things you'd like to be doing today, this has got to be in the top 10.
There's no question. It was number one when I woke up today.
Hey, you know, for the average fan that does not understand what Nevada basketball is all about, kind of in a thumbnail, kind of explain what you've been able to do and who you are and how you win at Nevada.
Well, I think the biggest thing really for us, Seth, was how do we build this thing as quick as we could, but also have sustainability and try to figure out how in our year four, as we kind of looked at this as a four-year cycle in college basketball, how do we build it the proper way, get better incrementally year by year so that we could peak in what now is actually our fourth year. Our team is we try to be cosmetically pleasing offensively. Defensively, we were pretty doggone good my first year when we didn't have offensive players. And you know, Coach, usually when you got really good offensive players, the defense can slip a little bit. And when you got great defenders, a lot of those guys aren't great shooters. And so the one glaring hole when we got the job 4 years ago, they were back-to-back years around 320, 340 from three-point range. So we wanted to add shooting, and having come from the D League, we felt like you know, the positionless basketball was really important to have guys that could play multiple positions. And then each year when you kind of go back and you try to evaluate your team and reassess it, after year one, it was how do we get more shooting? Then we addressed that. And then it became, you know, how do we get more depth? And we addressed that. And then it was how do we get more size? And so each of these off seasons, we tried to fill a hole that we've had because we have had holes. And now we do have depth. We do have size. But with those two things, it's also, as you know, it's added dilemmas, added decision making, added styles of play. And so all those things, we're still trying to figure out who we are, Coach.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because, you know, you've played small ball, positionless basketball, which has put a lot of pressure on your opponents. You've got really skilled players. I mean, I think of Jordan Caroline. I think of Caleb and Cody Martin. I mean, those guys are hard matchups, really hard matchups when they're your front court, but skilled front court players. Now you add big people like, you know, Trey Porter and Brown, and all of a sudden now that changes a little bit of the dynamic of your team. How different is that to coach? And does your team now have almost two personalities in a lot of ways?
I think we do, Coach. We do have two personalities. And not only adding Trey Porter and Jordan Brown, but really with our existing core people, because, you know, so much was written in the offseason that we had four returning starters, and it looked like we had all these returners, when in fact we really only have three returning starters that played in our uniform last year, that being both Cody and Caleb Martin along with Jordan Caroline. And everyone kept lumping Lindsey Drew in, but Lindsey's still out with the Achilles. We don't know if he'll return this year at all. So we really have three guys. And out of those three guys, last year for the majority of the year, Caleb Martin played the three. Now he has not played anything but the two. Jordan Caroline was our starting center. He now has played the majority of his minutes this year as the three man. And Cody Martin played the majority of the minutes until Lindsey Drew's injury late last year as a four man. So he's now playing the point guard. So we've added two big, and then we've asked our core three guys to all slide down a position when in today's basketball world, most teams are sliding players up a spot so that they can play with more faster pace and spread teams out. So we do have a different look. We should be a much better defensive team than we have in the past. And we certainly should be a much better rebounding team than we have in the past.
Yeah, I think the Martins are interesting because obviously we talk a lot about Caleb, and, you know, look, he's a versatile offensive player. There's no doubt about it. But Cody Martin, actually, I'm going to do something tomorrow on in our wraps during our games, and they're going to ask me for kind of a guy that makes other people better. Cody Martin is about as good a side course in a lot of ways as there is because he is versatile, but yet he's such a willing passer and such a good passer, right?
There's no question, Coach. I mean, when you talk about Cody Martin, you're talking about if people dissect and look at his assist-to-turnover ratio, it's absolutely amazing. And you think that this is a position that he has not played his whole life. And I think that the reason he should be so intriguing to the NBA level is because, look, we're not talking about the superstar or the top five on the team. But then when you start trying to piece together a roster and you start thinking about, all right, we have practice, injuries happen during the course of a season for games, Cody Martin can play so many different positions. In practice, he can play the one, two, the three. We have him guard the opposing team's best player, whether it's a point guard or a four-man. And so to me, because of his versatility, because he's such a great teammate, his practice habits are through the charts. And then when you watch him skeleton or dry run offense, he puts himself in a game mentally every single possession. And he's the ultimate pro's pro as far as preparation, studying opposing teams, tendencies. He asks a lot of high basketball IQ questions. And so in my eyes, when you talk about complimentary guys, I don't know how you could get a better player than him. And I say that in a really high regards because, you know, it's easy to put points on the board at the college level and then you go to the pro level and that might not happen, or you might be a great shot blocker in college and it doesn't translate to the next level to some degree. But I think what Cody has can translate. He can have a great pro career.
Yeah, the NBA is a league of role players and a couple of, like, ridiculously talented, terrific, you know, talents per se. I mean, that's just the way teams are made up. Now, you know, you talk about Jordan Brown. I mean, like, here's a guy that McDonald's All-American, the highest-rated player probably that's ever signed at Nevada. And I actually I watched you guys play the other night, and you and I have had conversations. Am I wrong? It seems like the light bulb's starting to go on in terms of the same transition every high school player has to go through. How long can you play hard? How, you know, what's your basketball IQ? Can we count on you defensively? From watching him the other day, it seems like he's starting to figure it out a little bit.
Yeah, Jordan, he's got a high motor. He's done a really good job picking up our offense. He's a smart player. I think the biggest thing, really, coach, is for Jordan is just that weight room and adding strength. And he's put a lot of time in, especially in the last month and a half with our strength coach. And you know, I think the one thing at Nevada, because we've been a preseason top 10, we have, out of the gate, maybe a little bit more pressure internally and externally. Maybe rotations become a little bit shorter because you have such a focus on how do we win this particular game. And I think if you are a middle-of-the-road conference team with few expectations, maybe a freshman plays a little bit more, especially early in the year. But we certainly feel like Jordan is going to have an incredible career. He's continuing to work on his perimeter shooting, but he's got such an incredible soft touch around the rim. And he exhibited that the other night against Arkansas Little Rock. And I think you can see his confidence starting to grow and grow with each day.
How about the energy at your place right now? Man, I'm watching the game the other night. It's rocking and rolling, packed arena. I mean, I think you guys are sold out for the season, if I'm not correct. What's that been like? What's been the key, besides winning, connecting with the community? I know that's a big thing for you. And I don't know if you got that through the G League experience or Danielle's just the magic wizard behind the magic. But what kind of things have you guys done to really connect with the community?
You know, I think the first thing, Coach, when I think about it is, you know, growing up with my dad at the University of Minnesota, I know when he got the job, their attendance was pathetic. And I remember going around with him. We'd stop in at McDonald's for me to get a quick hamburger after school before his practice. And our trunk was full of University of Minnesota basketball shirts. And everywhere we went, he would pass out University of Minnesota Golden Gopher basketball shirts. And so I think he was way ahead of his time from a promotion standpoint when you talk about the 1970s and his pregame warm-up. And by the time he had left the University of Minnesota, not only was Williams Arena sold out, but so was the hockey arena watching on closed-circuit TV. And I think he was a master promoter from the uniforms to the shoes they wore. So I had a great person to learn from. And then I think when you go to the G League and you go to the old CBA and the old USBL and your teams or programs or organizations, the only way they can survive financially is if you market and draw fans. And we were selling out in Rapid City, South Dakota. You got to get out in the community. You've got to become accessible. You've got to do things that you might not want when you're tired. Every pregame I've gone outside of our building, passing out pizzas or high-five in the student section, because we need that. They bring the energy for us. Our student section right now, it's actually blown all the players away and our staff, how incredible they've been so far through three home games. And we did sell out all of our season tickets as far as the season ticket package. So great crowds, all over 10,000 so far. And But I think the biggest key, really, it probably is my wife, Danielle, because almost, I'd say out of 7 nights a week, 3 to 4, she's out doing some function. She was out again this Saturday. I don't even know where she goes and who she speaks to, but she's probably been as important to anything that we've done outside of the basketball court.
Well, you guys have done a great job with your social media. Now you can get some people to come and play you guys. I mean, how difficult is scheduled?
scheduling's been really difficult, Seth. I think that it was interesting because, you know, everyone said when you make an NCAA tournament or when the program gets to 20 wins, it'll become easier. I actually thought, you know, year one was real easy. Everybody wanted to play us when we got the job and when they were coming off seven Division I wins. Next year became a little harder. The following year was really hard, and that's when we went on the road so much and played, like, WCC teams on the road. But it was a heavy-laden road schedule. And then this year, after we made the Sweet 16, scheduling actually became easier. We might not have got the home-and-home to start at Nevada, but we have gotten home-and-homes with USC, with the University of Utah, and then neutral site games against Arizona State and Staples. And we got a home-and-home with BYU that started here this year. So I think our schedule has really, really increased. It's become slightly easier as we got from that pretty doggone good to at least having the perception of being a top 25 or whatever program. So for us, it has become slightly easier, although, you know, we've played really well at home, and a lot of teams are trying to get us on neutral sites or, again, to start at their place first.
Well, Mus, we appreciate you coming on, and it is fun watching your team. It's fun watching your program build. It's fun watching how you're creating an image and a brand of Nevada basketball. And, you know, when people think of Nevada, back in the day, they thought of, obviously, the Running Rebels. Well, now when people think of Nevada basketball, obviously they think of the University of Nevada and what you're doing and the group you have. So we appreciate it, especially on your birthday, especially on a game day, especially after yesterday you were hanging out with Kevin Hart, in boxes, that we would actually wake you up, even though I know you don't sleep during the season much, and hang out with us. So I appreciate it, man. Keep going, and look forward to watching you guys.
Coach, thanks for having me on. Thanks for all you do for college basketball. It's awesome. Keep up your great work because it's so powerful to the game. Appreciate you having me on.
D-Squared, you're in Atlantis. Pretty good field. Who do you like in Atlantis?
I like Wisconsin. I'm going to be a homer here, Seth. I think Oklahoma, Christian James is going to be 26 a night. I don't think Stanford has much. Florida should be. Florida should be damn good, Seth. They got a lot of guys, but Jalen Hudson, they got a lot of guys back. But I like Wisconsin. I watching them, man, they were so good at Xavier. I'm going to take the Fighting Ethan Happs and go Badgers. That's what do you like?
I think I like Virginia. I think that final could be unbelievable. Like, yep. To me, that final could be first to 65, although I think Wisconsin plays a little faster. And I'd love it because both of these teams move the ball, move people, cut hard, defend hard, limit you to one shot, don't turn it over. That would be terrific. And Florida's a little kind of head-scratching to me. Keevon Allen's got to play better. Now, they're playing a freshman point guard, Andrew Nembhard, and I think it'll take time, but I think he'll be good if they defend Florida on the outside. But I think a Virginia-Wisconsin final, to me, it's acquired taste. To me, it would be an acquired taste. For me, I would like that final, and that would be good basketball for 40 minutes.
I'm with you on that.
Now, how about in Maui, by the way? My goal for Maui, forget about the games. You know what my goal for Maui is?
What?
Bill Walton, please keep your shirt on. I mean, because when you take your shirt off, it's embarrassing. Keep the shirt on, Bill, please. And then, Billis, put a little SPF 50 on that dome because you might have to let the grill an egg on the top of it. But
jeez.
But, I mean, look, you got Duke, which you got Auburn. You know, obviously those are two of the headliners per se. You got Gonzaga on the other half. Who do you like?
If it's close, I like Zach Norvell to make a shot for Gonzaga. I think he's really good. I like Duke to win the thing. But, man, I know there's a lot of guys to talk about with Gonzaga. But all I did was watch him unload in the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. Clutch shot to get out of Chicago. I like Duke. I mean, let's be honest. There's nothing that Duke has done since Kentucky game to say, hey, look, they're not as good as they played that night. They are. The kid Williamson, obviously. I would love to see Duke Gonzaga, though. That would be must-see TV. Duke Gonzaga with Walton doing it without a shirt on would be the highlight of the entire year. We need to shut it down.
You had to go there. You just had to go there. I think Auburn-Duke would be an interesting game.
Yeah.
Auburn, they're going to play five out. Every Macklemore changes their defense for sure. If you look at the numbers. When he got hurt, their defense really, really struggled. They can really shoot the three. That little guard, Jared Harper, is hard to keep out of the lane. Obviously, Brown can really shoot it. But the Gonzaga game, I think the matchup would be interesting. Brandon Clark, the transfer from San Jose State, he is long, quick, and athletic. And I know Killian Tilly's not there, and that hurts him. But Clark runs, always in the play, hard to keep off the glass, got a maturity about him. Rui Hachimura has really improved. I watched him the other day. His footwork is so good. He drives it. He can shoot it. He can post it. He runs the court. Look, Gonzaga will change their defenses and try to keep Duke off balance. Look, you got to take him out of transition. You got to take him off the glass. And then, you know, you got to figure out a way. You got to scrape off of Jones. Like to me, if someone's going to beat you, make Jones beat you. I'd almost put Jones's man, once he gives it up, right in the middle lane, and he's going to be the double guy. He's going to be the guy that's going to shrink the court, muck it up, try to take away potential to take charges. If Jones gets 20 and beats you, so be it. But you can't let those other two guys beat you. That's kind of my gut on that.
That's old school. That's old school Gene Katie, Bob Knight basketball. Help off the guy, put him in the middle, stay in front, make him score over you. If he goes to the rim, take a charge. There you go, folks.
There you go. Very cerebral. And then how about the NIT? Mm-hmm. I love the NIT. You know, yeah, growing up in New York, taking the train to the Garden from the Hicksville station to the Grand Central station, going to the old Garden, going to the new Garden. I mean, there's history now. The NIT is at the Barclays, which kind of takes away from it a little bit for me. But you've got big-time programs. Kansas, who's number two in the country, dropped one despite beating Michigan State. Really talented. And, I mean, even though they got a freshman backcourt, Dietrich Lawson, terrific passer. Obviously, they got Udoka Azubuike and Gerald Vick. Every time he shoots it, you think it's going in. And then you got Tennessee. Tennessee with the Admiral, Grant Williams, and Jordan Bone playing really well. Who do you like in the old NIT?
I like those two teams, Seth. I'm wondering about Louisville. You know, VJ King, I think, is really good. We talked about him last week. I just don't think they've played great. You know, but I do think this. I do think that on a big stage, Louisville will play well. But look, I'm so happy for Rick Barnes. Honest to God, his team is a potential Final Four team at Tennessee. His team is a potential SEC champ. His team is right there with Kentucky. And probably will be there the entire time. I'm so happy because it seemed like once he got to Texas, he got a stigma that I can't coach, I can recruit, he can't coach. That's just total crap.
To
your point, it is a joke. Quentin Grimes, I'm just so impressed with him, Seth. I'm going to take Tennessee in this. I'm going to take that. You mentioned him, the Admiral, but Grant Williams. I'm going to take him. And his toughness in the Garden, old school Willis Reed type stuff. Set Dave DeBuscher, Dick the Skull Barnett shooting up jumpers left hand. I can go Nick for Nick with anybody.
Bill Bradley, Stallworth surviving a heart attack.
Dave Stallworth, a Kansas guy. Give me Tennessee. I like him. I'm taking him. I think that there's going to be one less unbeaten, and that's going to be Kansas by the time the NIT figures itself out.
Well, if they can keep it a 70-point game, I think it's to Kansas' favor. They just got too many weapons. Gerald Vick, I mean, his last week has absolutely been incredible. But, you know, the Fighting Barneses, and you mentioned Kentucky, they were god-awful yesterday, I mean, defensively. I mean, a record 19 threes made against them in Rupp Arena, the most ever in Rupp Arena yesterday against the Fighting Cadets of VMI. And they've just got to figure out, and just talking real quickly about Kentucky, they got to figure out who their three dudes are. Here's the problem. They need Kwadi Green's shot making right now. They need PJ Washington's quickness on the baseline and obviously Ree Travis, but those are three of their worst defenders. So they've got to figure out some type of rotation and get their team to have that swag and that confidence that they had in the Bahamas, quite honestly. Now, there wasn't the same type of pressure, but Kentucky's, they're not playing well right now.
They haven't played well yet.
Early in the season. It's early. It's early.
It's early. But it gets late early. Sometimes it gets late early.
I know you're 0-1 in your tennis matches against your wife in the Bahamas now. I know that's a little disappointing. You were 0-1 against me on the golf course in the Bahamas. So I hope at least you have, you know, 3 or 4 really good games.
I was 1-1 against you in the summer playing golf. 1 on the mainland, I won. And I did have to run into the ocean. You sent me. I had to get baptized. You beat me so bad. I figured, where's John at? I needed to go into the ocean. And my wife on clay. She's a clay court specialist, apparently. We both, neither of us ever played on clay. We played on clay. She beat me 6-love, 6-4. And I'm not going to lie to you. I went straight to the bar.
You dink it, you get you running? Because that's not a pretty sight.
She did. She got me moving. You get me moving. I switch hands, so I don't move much. But I'll tell you this, I won the bar.
Are you staying in the cove? That's the bigger question. I mean, we stayed in the cove.
I am. We're staying in the cove.
Oh, I'll tell you.
Yes, we are.
It's good.
Yes,
it is good being Dan Dockish. I swear it is. I'm sitting in the lovely confines of Avon, Connecticut with Jake the Wonder Dog, and you're in the cove. That's just how life is.
I'm in the cove.
Well, hey,
I'm in the cove.
I'll
send you a picture of me and Lee in our bikinis.
All right, and I will be speaking to you at some point tomorrow or whatever on live television.
All right, see you guys.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.